This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, live from Dallas Retirement Center, here's Brent and Dave.
And welcome to Newsmakers, folks. Thanks for being with us. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne, and we're at the Dallas Retirement Village out here in Dallas, and it's happy Veterans Day to everyone. I want to start the day by saying, well, one, it's really an honor to be here out here. We're going to have a lot of great interviews, a lot of great individuals that have served, and some great stories. So, folks, kind of push the work aside on your desk, sit down and have a listen, and it's going to be a good couple of hours. Dave and I are going to be here.
That's right.
All right. So it's Veterans Day. I want to mention a couple people in my family. You got people in your family that have served?
I do. My stepdaughter, Ashley, and she's in the National Guard. She's been there for about 8 years now.
Army National Guard?
Army National Guard.
Okay.
And then the son, Sean, is in the Navy.
Really?
Yes.
Well, the Navy's awesome. My best friend
in Florida
was a career naval officer.
Nice.
And actually, I posted on Facebook in honor to him today. 20 years in the Navy, Academy grad, Mark Watson, Lieutenant Commander Mark Watson, retired. It's cool to have a... kind of that after your name, isn't it?
Yes, retired.
He's Lieutenant Commander Mark Watson, U.S. Navy, retired. And my Uncle Don, didn't see a ton of him growing up because he was always in an Air Force base somewhere.
Oh, wow.
So this is my dad's only brother, and he started in the Marines, enlisted. I think he was like 17 years old, and spent a little time in the Marines, and then came out and ended up going into the Air Force and finishing his education and became a... a navigator, an aviation navigator in the Air Force, and flew in Vietnam, and later flew F-111s. Those are cool. They're not, they're a little bit fast.
Right.
A little bit fast.
Just a little.
F-111s, it took him, the service was really great to him. It took him to London, or England, I should say, an Air Force base there, and some time in Las Vegas and so forth. So thanks to the service to Uncle Don and Mark Watson, and of course my son. We've talked about him on Newsmakers. If you're a regular listener, you know my son has been a Marine for all of 5 weeks now, maybe 6 weeks. A newly minted second lieutenant, just getting his he's getting his rifle range is what he's doing on qualifying on.
That's important to
because
have.
Because if you don't qualify, if you're a Marine and you don't qualify with the rifle at like 500 yards, you're not a Marine.
No.
Yeah, you're no longer a Marine. So Alexander DeHart, I told a story last week and how he had the opportunity to greet and salute the Vice President of the United States.
That's awesome.
It was like a week or two ago. And, you've only been a Marine 3 weeks or something. But during the Marine Corps Marathon, he had an opportunity to see the Sergeant Major of the Marine Corps, of which there's one. Dave.
Right.
There's one
exactly,
of those, the Sergeant Major.
Yeah.
And a couple other dignitaries high up in the Marines. And then, of course, the Secret Service comes by and says, gentlemen, and these are the, really green second lieutenants, right? Just learning how to be a Marine officer. And it's just like when the Vice President walks by, if he's within 30 feet, you will salute him and blah, blah, blah. And they're like, the Vice President, very surprising. And then the Secret Service directed him. Says, when the Vice President enters this press area, you're to make sure that nobody goes through. And they're like, they're looking around. There's SWAT people. Right?
Nice.
And there's... and their Secret Service and a bunch of people are armed, but not them. They're just, volunteering.
They're just saluting.
But very, very cool. And want to thank everybody. And you know what? I don't want to be remiss. My friend, I mentioned Lieutenant Commander Watson, is married to a Navy servicewoman who was a nurse in the Navy, and that's where they met.
Uh-huh.
So Mark and Mary Watson both served the country in that capacity, and my uncle and my son. And that's about, my father served for 2 years during the Korean conflict.
Oh, you have
in the Army.
Military history in your family.
Think. I never had the privilege to serve, but that's where we are. Anyway, welcome to Newsmakers, folks. It's Veterans Day. We're going to be telling on some stories. We're going to have a lot of guests and interviewing them. And we're at a Dallas Retirement Village. It's my first time here.
Mine too.
It looks pretty remarkable.
If I'm going to retire, this is the place I want to retire.
Hopefully we'll talk more about that as the days go on, as the 2 hours goes on today, and what they have out here. In the meantime, let's talk to our first guest. Let's talk to Earl. Earl Proctor is here with us, and Earl's wearing a cap. It says he's a World War II veteran. Earl, thanks for being here.
Okay. I had four brothers. My oldest brother served in the Army. The second one served in the Marines. I served in the Army Medical Corps in Germany.
Wow.
The next one served in the Korean conflict. Hank flew the F-101s out of Portland when they was there. Then when they shipped him overseas in Vietnam, he flew the reconnaissance plane.
Oh, really?
And flew over and spotting out the enemy.
So all five of you and your family served.
Yeah.
That is incredible.
And my dad was in the First World War, so all five of us boys second.
Wow, that's a lot of military.
Yeah.
All at once.
Anyway, the story that I had to tell was what some of the stuff I went through in Germany.
Yeah.
And being a farm boy, and I lived in Galena, Kansas, in the southeastern corner of Kansas. And they took us up to Leavenworth, Kansas to get in the Army. I got in the Army, and they shipped us out to Camp Hood, Texas, for basic training. I took anti-tank training, and when I got down to Mississippi to join the 63rd Infantry Division, they said, we don't need gunners, we need medics. They put me in the medical corps.
Huh.
Well, they shipped me overseas as a first aidman and a litter bearer. So I was a member of a litter bearer squad.
And what does that mean, litter bearer?
It means that when we go out and pick up an injured person, the four of us, and we have the litter. We have a long pole with canvas in between, and we put them on that, and each one gets a corner of it and carry it back to the aid station.
So how old are you, and this happens, and you end up going over to Leavenworth and signing up?
18.
You're 18 years old.
I was 18 when I went in.
And for like a minute, you think you're going to be anti-tank, and the next minute, oh, by the way, you're a medic.
Yeah.
Okay.
So anyway, I was with the medical corps. The corporal that was over the four of us, he had come down from Alaska, so he'd had some experience. So they put him in charge of our litter bearer. And he and I, myself, and two other fellows. One of them was a smart aleck, and when we got captured later on in the story, he got smart with some of the answers, and we never seen him again.
Really?
And the lieutenant that was captured with us, we never seen him again. So anyway, the five of us walked for 2 weeks to join the other prisoners. But anyway, being from Kansas, I never knew what Salem, Oregon was at.
Right.
Well, when I went into service, and I served over there as a medic, and we got captured, and we 2 weeks right before the war was over.
All right, let's fill in a couple of things. You got sent to the European theater, right?
Yeah. And so I chose to come home with the prisoners rather than go back to my own outfit. The rumor was that the 63rd would be sent to the South Pacific in flight over there. Which they didn't have to. The war was over before they had to do that. But anyway, I chose to come home with the prisoners. So they sent us up to up there in northern part of France. And anyway, I was in Camp Lucky Strike there of all the ex-prisoners. And from there, they put us on Liberty ship and sent us to New York City. And when we got into New York that afternoon, we was all on one side of the ship. And the ship was leaning so bad, the captain come on board on the loudspeaker and he said, move back away from the ship rail. I can't steer the ship.
Wow.
We moved back. We moved back away from it and come on in. We all got to see the Statue of Liberty. We came in that night. We came right off the boat, right up to camp up there in New York, and had a big meal for us and stuff. We didn't get the welcome we got when we went back on that honor flight. That honor flight we got honored in every airport. There's people there to meet us, honoring the veterans.
As well they should.
That must have been pretty special for you.
Yeah. Anyway, well, we shipped up when they had the Belgian Bulge, our unit was shipped up into the Saar Basin. So we stationed at Saargemein. And from there, we would make raids into Germany. They had Germans across the line, across the river, and we was on one side. And finally, we took that to that area too. But then we walked to the railroad track, and they said, step on every tie because this thing has been full of mines, and we haven't had a chance to get them out.
Mm.
So we walked up that thing. About, they said 4 miles. Well, we walked on that, stepped on every tie. Anyway, when we got up there, I took my vest and my gas mask and my K rations, and I put them right down there by the railroad track. And I figured when we go over this hill and get to pick up the fellow that we were going after, that I'd come back and pick that up on the way back by. Well, we went started up that, and we started a little bit of a draw, kind of like when they plowed the field, they had a dead fur. We was following that right up that hill. I saw tracers going between the Corporal Smith and myself, just tracers going between us. He's about 20 feet ahead of me. I said, hit the ground, and we hit the ground. We lay there for 30 minutes. Bullets just going just over the top of our backs.
Wow.
And so as soon as the bullet stopped, I said, let's go. We jumped up and we all made a run for it, go over the top of the hill. I don't know if that was friendly fire from our own outfits or where it was the Germans. I don't really know.
Hmm.
But it could have been.
Did you all survive that then?
We never did know where it was from our own outfit or what. But they could have been over in that village over there shooting across there. Anyway, we went over the top of the hill and we saw him down there. But they had these little buildings look like a little outhouse. They mm-hmm. full of poles. They put their hay up on somewhere on that pole. This little building is full of those stakes. This guy was in a shell hole, and he waved at us when he saw us up on the hill. We made a run for him down there, that litter, and we put him on the litter in the aid station. And the aid man, the first aid guy that had come through first, had wrapped him up pretty good. All of his injuries. So we checked him over, put him on that, grabbed that thing up and started running up the hill with us. And we heard a shell coming. We set him down, laid down right beside of him, and shell went off right where we had just picked him up.
Oh.
And we did it again, picked him up, run again, and shell went off just right where we'd just been then. We made the tank, instead of going straight over the hill, where my jacket and stuff was at, when we got top of the hill, we cut off on an angle on the left. And I'd have to get the jacket and stuff picked up. Anyway, we went over the hill that way, and we carried him the 4 miles back in aid station.
Four? Wow. Did you just say 4 miles?
Yeah.
Wow.
And they gave us the Bronze Star for rescuing him in open fire out there in the field. So Sergeant Smith, and was a Corporal Smith, rather, was with us on that deal. Anyway,
so at this point, you're just you're a private, right?
I was a private. Yeah.
Or a PFC yet, even?
Well, I finally made a PFC.
Okay, but still pretty green, and you're out there taking fire, taking shells.
18 years old.
18.
Anyway,
years old.
It finally made us all PFCs, and
Well, we need to take a break, Earl, but we'll come back to you, okay?
We're going to keep Earl with us. Yeah. We're going to take a quick break for commercials to pay the bills, and we'll come back and talk to Earl some more about his experiences in World War II. Thanks for joining us. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne on Newsmakers 1430 KYKN.
Now, back to Len Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Back to Brent and Dave, live from Dallas Retirement Center on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
It's a special Veterans Day broadcast here at the Dallas Retirement Center. I kind of lost my train. I thought I was imagining being a medic running to save somebody and doing it for 4 miles, carrying somebody.
Under fire
like Earl has.
Welcome back, folks. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne. We're talking to Earl Proctor, a World War II veteran. His father served in World War I, and he and his four brothers all served our country. Army, Marine, his younger brother served in the Korean conflict, and Hank flew in Vietnam even, so a great history of service in the family. And we're going to get right back to Earl's stories, because there's more than we can encompass here today. Earl, tell us a little bit, if you would, because you served as, you were a POW, got captured, right? So how did that come to pass? And I'd also like to know how they treated you.
Well, at the end of the war, we was advancing so fast, we was taking ground that we'd never been on. And we got a call for B Company. They had went over one hole and starting up another one, they got hit. And they was in this area here. And we went, the lieutenant got the Jeep driver and the first sergeant and four of us medics that was litter barracks squad. Mm-hmm. And the seven of us got on that Jeep. We ran a hill this way, around to the right, and came around to a house. It's loaded with Germans.
Oh, boy.
And they saw it was all medics. They just right underneath the tire level. And all we could do was just put up our hands. So they questioned us there, and they took us over the hill to the right, back up there to a little village. And they had German officers sitting there. They spoke excellent English.
Really?
And they sat there, and they interviewed each one of us. And all I did was every time they'd ask me anything, I can't answer that. I can't answer that. And they got tired of it, and they take your stuff, get out. So I got out of there.
Must have been scary to be there and hear the gunfire and have it be so close, but at least they were shooting at
anyway, they kept the lieutenant and one private. It was a smart aleck kid that they kept. He evidently gave them some answers that they didn't think he might knew something. He didn't know anything. Mm. Anyway, the rest of us all got with a German soldier, and we started walking. We walked for 2 weeks. And we traveled through the part of the country down there in the southern part of Germany. Those people, they didn't go along with Hitler and all of his gang up there north in the Berlin. One lady came out there one night, and she said her name was Fredrickson. And she gave us all an apple apiece. And she said if the Germans know that she had apples, they would take them all away from her.
Wow.
So they have to hide anything they got, keep waiting. The Germans were low on food. They were stealing stuff from the people in order to feed their troops. Anyway.
So did you end up?
When we joined the group, we finally made 2 feet after we marched. We finally joined at 2,000 groups of American and British that they dumped out of all the holding camps up north. We, on our walk, had stayed one night in one of those camps, and all that was in there was just Russians. And the rest of them had all been sent south. Anyway, we was only there about a day, and the war was over.
Wow.
When we got joined that big group, we was in that big barn, and the fella got up to use a little train, and he said, I'm afraid to go out there. I don't see a guard. We all got up and looked. The guards had all run. They was going away. They'd vacated.
Wow.
Anyway, we got sent up north. From there, they brought in those Army ducks. Mm-hmm. Put us on Army ducks and took us out the airfield. Put us on a little C-40, I think, plane. Shipped us up north to one of the big camps up there. And they gave those guys all haircuts and deloused them. And gave us all new uniforms.
We're talking to Earl Proctor. He served in World War II. He's a veteran. He's given us a story about getting captured by the Germans as a medic, an Army medic, as he served as a private. Earl, that's an amazing story. So you weren't a prisoner of war very long, thank goodness, because I don't know if they would have had enough money, food to even feed you, since they didn't have food to feed their own army. That is amazing. Yeah. And so obviously you reconnected. You served in the 63rd Infantry as the medic. Okay. And you told us before the break about a story on rescuing a young man that you received the Bronze Star for, and you're under fire and carrying this guy for 4 miles. That's not the only time you're under fire, right?
Yeah.
You've experienced that where you had to really hit the deck and try to preserve your life.
Well, being from the southeastern part of Kansas, I didn't know what Salem, Oregon was at. I was a country boy.
Right.
We lived on a farm. My father rented a farm in the very southeastern corner of Kansas. We could throw a rock over into Missouri or Oklahoma.
And wow.
When I got drafted right out of there. So anyway, I had no idea where was that. Well, to have a fellow from Salem, Oregon, be our squad leader, or litter bear leader. Anyway, it's unusual. And so when I came back to the States, he probably had enough time to get out, but I didn't. I had to, on that point system, they sent me to Seattle. So I worked as a medic in the dispensaries up there. Mm. And every time an opening come open, I'd bid it. I'd get it. I moved up. I ended up as a tech sergeant.
Wow.
And I was a tech sergeant in charge of the dispensaries in Seattle at Fort Lawton. And I worked there and taking care of the troops coming back from the South Pacific, the ones we send over for replacements. And we give them all shots and stuff. Then when they said I could make first sergeant if I wanted to re-enlist, I said, no, I want out. So I got out. And I came back down to Independence to see my sister. It moved out here to Independence. And when I got discharged, I came down to see her. And she said, what are you going to do now? And I said, well, I don't want to go back to Kansas either. Lead and zinc mining or farming. I don't have any money. And I didn't know any part of those mines.
So here we are.
So anyway, I decided to stay out here. So I got discharged on Friday. Saturday, I came over here to Dallas, signed up at the armory, walked back, hitchhiked back to Independence, went into the mill down there in the sawmill, talked to the superintendent. He said, you looking for work? And I said, yeah. He said, well, come with me. And I said, well, I'm not ready for work. I just got out of the army. I'm still in dress khakis. And he said, I said, I don't even have a pair of gloves. And he said, I'll get you a pair.
Nice.
He took me to the office, got me a pair of gloves, and took me out to the planer, and I fed planer all Monday afternoon.
Wow.
I was in.
And hired a vet right there. Not everybody you served with made it back, right? Did you lose some people that you served with or were close to you?
Yeah.
Well, thank you for your service, Earl. Thank you.
Yeah.
No, that's a great story. So I think we could come out and hang out with Earl for a while.
Yeah, we could. We could, certainly.
I think we're going to take another break. We've got a lot of people to talk to. We've got some great stories coming up. There's people right outside here in the main hall here at the Dallas Retirement Village.
You're all done with me.
We are done with you for now. Thank you, Earl. Appreciate that. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Morin. We're in a special Veterans Day broadcast, and we're going to be talking about people's services and their stories for until 2 o'clock today. 2-hour special. Let's go back to some commercials and we'll come back and another guest. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Morin. You're listening to 1430 KYKN.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now live from Dallas Retirement Center, here's Brent and Dave.
This is Rich Kansky, and this segment of Newsmakers is brought to you by Green Acres Landscape.
And welcome back to Newsmakers. We're at the Dallas Retirement Village, and our broadcast today is brought to you in part by Sportsman's Warehouse, Mid-Valley Line-X, and R&R Tree Service. And Brent, we have another guest.
Another guest with us today. Thanks for being with us. Stanton Ricky joins us to chat about his services. Happy Veterans Day. It's nice to have you with us. I guess you've been around a day or two.
Thank you.
Somebody already talked, whispered in my ear, you're 99 years old.
That's true.
And he's also wearing a three-war veteran hat.
Yes.
And a jacket that identifies him as a lieutenant colonel, retired U.S. Air Force. We're talking during the commercials. Stanton, first of all, thanks for your service. It was really incredible. And you served in three different branches of the military.
Yes, as a young man in high school, I enlisted in the Marine Corps Reserve. And what happened then, of course, in 1940, we were all called to active duty. And I served in the Marines from 1938 to 1942. Along the way, I wanted to fly, and the Marine Corps and Navy program for aviation cadets required 2 years of college. I only had one.
Mm.
I took a two-year equivalent examination to enlist in the Army Aviation Cadet Program, discharged from the Marines to take effect and go through Army pilot training.
Oh, nice.
So by 1943, I had become a bomber pilot on a B-17, four-engine bomber, and was sent to Europe, where I flew 27 and a half combat missions.
And a half?
I say and a half because I was shot down during an air battle on my 28th combat mission.
Wow.
My particular airplane was involved in a situation where the weather was bad. Most of the Air Force went home. Some bombed alternate targets. We missed our rendezvous with our fighter escorts. And to make a long story short, 26 bombers were in southern Germany practically alone.
Oof.
And we were jumped by 200 German fighters. In the ensuing air battle, we shot down 66 of them, and they shot down 14 of us, including me.
Wow.
I lost 5 killed and 3 wounded in my airplane, went into a spin, on fire, and was able to finally get out by parachute. As we landed in the air battle, why, there were planes falling all over the sky, both German and American, people parachuting everywhere, and most people were picked up initially. We were about 65 miles from Switzerland, and I had turned my airplane in that direction after sustaining the hits, enabling my people to get out. And I must have been parachuting out on the edge of the air battle because I landed in a tree in a forest, and I was not picked up initially as most people were.
Mm.
We lost 143 men on that particular flight. And of that 143, why, something like 63 were killed and 80 were picked up and became prisoners of war initially. And in my case, I was on the edge of the battle when I landed in this tree, got out of the tree, buried my pistol. I was going to shoot my way out of Germany with a 45 in one clip, and buried my identifying gear. Along the way, and I had an escape kit with a map indicating that Switzerland was in a certain direction, and I decided I would head for that area. And what happened was I found a clothesline and stole some clothes, put them over my khaki uniform, blue shirt and trousers, and proceeded toward Switzerland. All along the way, I had several experiences where I was stopped at one point by people who say, "Where are you going?" Oh, my, I digress. I carried a bucket for a while to make it look like I was going somewhere,
mm-hmm.
And that didn't work too well. I picked up a hoe. I carried this hoe over my shoulder. I was stopped by 3 German farmers. And they said, "Wo gehen Sie mit der Hauer?" Well, I had a little high school German, so I understood, "Where you're going with the hoe." So I said, "Ich nicht deine Hauer, ist meine." And they came toward me, and I swung the hoe at them. I said, "Ah, scheiße!" And just took off and left them. The next experience I had en route was I arrived at a lake, Lake Bodensee, Lake Constance in English, which is a border between Switzerland and Germany. At that point, I attempted to steal a boat overnight, got in the farmhouse and got some oars,
And then when I escaped kid, I had a little rotary file, and the boats were chained to concrete piers. I was so swollen away on that damn thing. And all of a sudden, I heard people shouting, "Hey, hey, the boat, the boat!" And the people all came out and they chased me for a while.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, I'm giving you the interesting parts of my experience.
Sure.
What happened next was I stole a bicycle. There were two people working in the field, a couple of bikes by the side of the road. And I pedaled that bicycle. If I had kept that bike, I probably would have made it all the way into France. As it was, I arrived at the Swiss border near the town of Constance. And at that point, I got experienced a puncture of my tire, and I abandoned the bicycle. I was walking along, and I'm in civilian clothes. I've got a red handlebar mustache, pretty disheveled appearance. And what happened was the police stopped and demanded identification, which, of course, I did not have. And so they took me to the police station. And at that point, I stripped off my German clothing, revealing my uniform underneath, because I didn't want to end up with the Gestapo as a saboteur or a spy or something of that type. So at this point, I said to the desk sergeant, "Ich bin ein Amerikaner Flieger." I'm an American flyer. Mm-hmm. "Ich gehe nach der Luftwaffe oder der Wehrmacht." I go to the Army or the Air Force. And at that point, he actually thanked me.
Wow.
He said, "Danke, danke."
Are you still in Germany at this point?
I'm in Germany, standing in the police station in Constance in civilian clothes. And it was not a very happy experience.
I'm sure.
So at that point, they turned me over to the military. And the Army initially took me back to the same airfield that we had been bombing.
Oh.
Now, the airfield was called Memmingen Air Base. Memmingen, we found out many years later, was a research and development field. And that's why it was so heavily defended. The remaining 12 bombers of our group went in and bombed that airfield and did a lot of damage. Among other things, they destroyed a four-engine bomber, a Messerschmitt 264, which was a prototype, the only one they had, capable of reaching the United States.
Mm.
And I was there for several days, and during an air raid one night, they came and got me, took me down into an underground installation. I didn't see anything at this point, but I knew there was an underground installation at Memmingen Airfield. Many years later, at a reunion of our bomb group in 1987, we were briefed by an individual who wrote her thesis on this particular raid, talked to German historians, American historians. We found out they were building the Messerschmitt 262, the first jet fighter in that underground installation. That's one reason it was so heavily defended.
Wow. When you were shot down, had you already dropped your bombs, or you hadn't got there yet?
We had just turned on the initial point of the bomb run.
Oh.
Yeah, we had not dropped our bombs.
But some of your compatriots were able to survive battle.
12 bombers went in and actually did considerable damage on this particular target.
Yep. We're talking to Stanton Rickey, I should say Lieutenant Colonel Stanton Rickey, right? So you were in the service, of course, at that point, you're in the Army or the Army Air Corps.
Army Air Corps.
Later, you know, according to his hat, I'm learning a lot of things from his hat, he also served in Korea and Vietnam. Started as a Marine, went to the Army Air Corps, and of course, eventually spent the rest of your career with the Air Force, U.S. Air Force, as they split off. So tell us how you got out of Germany at this point. How long were you in their capture?
Well, I was a prisoner of war at this point, and I spent 10 months as a prisoner of war. Wherever you were shot down in Germany, you were taken to a central interrogation point near Frankfurt. It was called Oberursel. And at Oberursel, you were put in solitary confinement and left to cook for a while. And they give you a little barley and bread, and that was all. And they call you out for interrogation. And I survived a couple of interrogations without revealing anything. They asked questions What unit were you in? They didn't even know that in my case because the events, I was loose for 6 days. I was not associated with a particular raid. Mm. And so they didn't know who I was. And so I just toughed it out. Had one individual in civilian clothes come in and say, I represent the International Red Cross. We need this information. Your name, your rank, your serial number, your hometown. That's fine. What was your target? Where were you from? And so forth. Mm-hmm. And of course, I denied all of these things. At that point, he's pounded the table and he says, hey, you're not cooperating. He says, we're going to withhold privileges. I said, I haven't seen any privileges yet at this point. And at that point, why they shipped me out. And I went to a permanent camp by rail, along with another group of Americans. There were 9,000 prisoners in mostly officers of the United States and Great Britain, Canada, and the Soviet Union in this particular camp. Stalag Luft 1, the northeast corner of Germany. Mm. And I was there for 10 months.
Wow. How was your treatment while you were there?
Treatment was, I would say, it was fair, a little bit harsh, but fair. And we survived on the German rations. Plus, we received parcels through the International Red Cross, which had supplementary foods. And that took us through this area. A lot of people not aware of this. But at one point, after we bombed Dresden in February 1945, creating 100,000 casualties in a firestorm, well, Hitler issued an order, execute all Allied airmen prisoners of war.
Wow.
And the only thing that saved us at that point was Hermann Göring, head of the Luftwaffe, intervened. And he said, look, boss, not too good an idea. We have 1 million of our people in the United States and in Canada as POWs, and they'll retaliate. So instead, they stopped all the Red Cross parcels, cut our rations down to practically nothing. And from February until May of 1945, we existed on two slices of black bread, sawdust-laden bread, and one bowl of soup per day.
Wow.
It was about 700 calories. If the war had lasted a little longer, we would have been in bad shape.
Yeah.
But as it was, in May of 1945, the war ended. And then the Soviet troops came through, and we were liberated. Overnight, the Germans issued an order to us, be prepared to march out tomorrow. And the Colonel Zemke, the leading American officer of the camp who dealt with the Germans, said, hell no, we won't go. We're not going. And so we woke up the next morning, and the Germans had disappeared. We're all on our own. Soviets came through. 2 weeks later, we were flown out. It was quite an experience with the Russians, too, because I shouldn't say Russians, because most of them were Siberian troops, it looked like, mm-hmm. Mongols and things like that. But they were Soviets. They did everything they could for us. They brought in special food. They ran 200 head of cattle into that camp and said, slaughter them for the meat.
Wow.
We also found that the Red Cross parcels that had been denied, there was a warehouse full of them immediately adjacent.
Wow. We have to take a break, but yeah. Thank you for your service. Stanton Rickey, three-war survivor. Thank you so much for your service.
Three branches.
Three branches.
Thank you so much. Yeah. We didn't even get a chance to talk about his special souvenir there, but maybe we'll talk about it during the break and tell you all about it.
We got a couple minutes after that.
This is Brent DeHart with Dave Warren, and we're talking to Lieutenant Commander Stanton Rickey on this special Veterans Day broadcast. We're going to be with you till 2 o'clock. Stick with us on 1430 KYKN.
Now, back to Len Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Back to Brent and Dave, live from Dallas Retirement Center on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
actually at the Dallas Retirement Village in Dallas, Oregon. And our special two-hour broadcast on this Veterans Day is brought to you by Advantage Heating and Air Conditioning, Tom Marks Realtor, and Valley Flooring Center. And we're back.
Welcome back, everybody. Brent DeHart here with Dave Moore. And we're talking to Lieutenant Command, Lieutenant Colonel Stanton Rickey about his World War II experiences. And he brought a souvenir of sorts. This thing is about the size of a cantaloupe. And it's a little bit of rusted metal, and it's got a big puncture hole in it. And
yes.
What is this thing?
This is what we call the walk-around bottle. Actually, it's a portable oxygen bottle. And these aircraft, we had oxygen masks, and we were tethered to oxygen at every position on the airplane. If you wanted to walk around the airplane to check on something, you undid the major bottle, you hooked up to this, and you walked around with it.
Okay, of course, we're talking about the B-17.
We're talking about the B-17. Now, this particular object came from my crash site. The one individual, 11-year-old boy, observed the air battle I was shot down on, talked to his nephew many years later. The nephew became what they call a battlefield archaeologist. His hobby is investigating crash sites. Many people throughout Germany are involved in this today. And he went to my particular crash site, identified me as a result of digging up a rusty old machine gun with a serial number on it.
Wow.
And the serial number, he able to equate to the tail number of my airplane, to the organization I was in, and he went ahead and contacted me. He visited me in Arizona with 40 pounds of debris from the luggage of my airplane.
Jeez.
This airplane exploded on the ground. That's why you see the condition like this.
Holy cow.
And this is just one of the things that he delivered. 40 pounds of debris in his luggage.
Jeez.
I'm still in touch with this individual. He's a very interesting man. What he does now, he is involved with unexploded ordnance. And when a construction site finds an old bomb or something, he goes in and disables it.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, interesting individual.
So, Colonel Rickey, really quickly, we have a minute or so left. Tell us how the rest of your career played out. The military obviously was very good to you. They sent you to school.
That's right.
You ended up flying. When did you retire?
I retired in 1971.
And at that point, you were Lieutenant Colonel.
Yes.
And you'd already been in for 30 years?
Yes, 33 years, but 26 of it was active duty.
Wow. 26 active duty, and you flew everything from a B-17 to, I think you told us during the break, a C-130.
My final job in the Air Force was at 7th Air Force at Tan Son Nhut in Vietnam, selecting targets for strike against North Vietnam and Laos.
Wow. That's crazy.
Holy cow. Well, we thank you so much for everything you've done. I think we could probably spend the entire 2 hours, but there's some other remarkable individuals out there we're going to interview as well. Stanton Rickey, resident here at the Dallas Retirement Village, along with his wife, right? New here. He's got family here in town. Great place. So thank you for your service. We want to honor you on this Veterans Day. Lieutenant Colonel Stanton Rickey, 3 wars, 3 branches of service. We'll be right back on KYKN 1430 with Brent and Dave.
And also thanks to L&L Equipment, Capital Coffee, and Squirrels Taxi Service for our special Veterans Day broadcast here at Dallas Retirement Center. We'll be back next hour. Stay tuned.
This has been Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.